This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You and I have unfinished business.
The first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Do you really think you have a chance against us, Mr. Cowboy?
Get away from her, you...
Ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan alongside Ian McNally and Bahe Yusuf. We have seen Ant-Man and the Wasp, the 20th movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Wow.
It's the first one post-Avengers Infinity War, and it's fun, it's frivolous, it's a little bit of a palate cleanser, very much like the first Ant-Man was after Age of Ultron. They seem to completely lighten the mood.
Yeah, they don't feel discount or budget or like, it is a bit lightweight, but it doesn't feel like a waste of time at the cinema.
No, I mean, it's a fun...
Superhero movie,
right?
Mostly there's, standalone.
And not only that, but there's no bigger thing. There's no like light, there's no end of world consequences.
There's no bigger thing, really.
There's no, well...
So the story kind of almost immediately picks up from the last one, which is about Scott Lang discovering the suit, helping out Hank Pym and Hope. And there is a throwaway thread in the last one about what happens to Hank's wife and Hope's mother. And this movie kind of opens with that same thread. And the entire film is essentially a family story about them searching for Janet Van Dyne, who went missing sometime during the Cold War.
But it is, and then it isn't. This film kind of makes a mockery of the three-act structure. There's kind of just, it's all over the place, but it's fine.
No, you're right, because I kept looking at my watch because so much had happened. And then I was like, wait, it's only been 45 minutes.
Because there is the quest for Janet Van Dyne, but there's also, Scott has been on house arrest for 2 or 3 years because of his involvement in Captain America Civil War. Yeah. Then you also have, he's also been part of a business with his friends, his ex-con friends that are trying to do security solutions for people. But then there's also Walton Goggins and his arms dealers. And then there's also, and we haven't even got to the ghost yet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who is supposed to be the villain of the piece.
Yeah.
Right? All of this stuff is happening simultaneously. There isn't really a third act climax because there's so much action taking place throughout this film.
Yeah.
It's such a weird structure.
But I think it kind of works. A little bit like Thor Ragnarok. I don't push it as far as that, but it's kind of like, it's a feeling I've gotten off the Marvel movies more and more where it feels like you're reading the comic as in that this is an issue or this is the bumper summer issue. This is the summer miniseries crossover.
Yeah, yeah.
But you are checking in on the ingoing lives of these characters. They really have sold this idea of the universe more than just the crossover big episodes of like, this is their lives. You're just popping in for a bit to have a look and then moving on. I really like the fact that we didn't get to see the ghost's origin in the beginning of this movie before we see the ghost.
Yeah.
Which is because usually, you know,
you just
it's the Spider-Man 2 Alfred Molina thing. You know, you get to see Doc Ock.
Yeah.
You know, Spider-Man is there when Doc Ock gets created. Whereas in this, it's like, who's this?
Yeah, yeah. We're all surprised at the same time, which is great.
She kind of just pops up and everyone goes,
I mean, it was great because in that scene, I've seen a lot of the trailers.
Yes.
I've seen all of the trailers. And that's my main complaint. If you haven't seen the trailers, don't watch the trailers.
I've only seen two of them. But like you said earlier, there's a lot of footage that's spread across those two trailers and that's all the way through the movie.
Yeah, but it's not just the two trailers. I've watched the two trailers. I've watched all the TV spots. And this is not something I like to do. I had to do it
to edit the video.
For the edit the video. So I'm watching it going, and I'm missing out all these sort of big laugh bits because I'd seen it.
Yeah.
You know, and if you've seen the trailers, you've seen all the big laugh bits, which is a bit of a waste, I think.
And it's also weird coming from Marvel.
Yeah.
They
generally don't do that.
They don't generally do that.
We've been led astray by them plenty of times where all the footage in the trailer has come from the first 20 minutes of the film.
And there are a lot of big laughs. I mean, there are jokes scattered throughout this entire film and they're pretty spot on. I mean, Paul Rudd and Michael Peña are fantastic.
I mean, look, I think Michael Douglas is fantastic.
Yes.
There's some really great bits where you just were not expecting it from him, right? Even, you know, yeah, I don't know. His playing it straight in a comedic movie is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that was great.
And it's not just the, you know, superheroes with quips, jokes. There is like the whole back to school sequence.
Yeah.
Is hilarious. And the way it's just, it comes out of nowhere. Yeah. It's not in the trailers. We won't talk about it much. But
it's
it
in the TV spot.
Is it in the TV spot? I didn't see that.
It's a TV spot.
But even the climax of that with Michael Douglas' quips are fantastic.
Fantastic. Hilarious.
And I love the fact that they're keeping him around. Like, it felt like after the first Ant-Man, and old superhero movies used to do that. If there was a passing of the torch, there was an actual passing of the torch.
And then the other guy would leave.
Yeah, and there was a moment where I thought, you know, Michael Douglas was going to bite it early, and I was like, oh no, he's too good. Keep him around.
Well, you know, it's just because they can CG him back to life whenever they want.
Yes. Yeah, they can
again,
do that now.
Marvel is doing that again. The movie opens up with a sequence where you see young Michelle Pfeiffer and young Michael Douglas. They're getting better and better at it.
Yeah.
Mm. Michelle Pfeiffer in particular was frightening to watch because that was the Michelle Pfeiffer I grew up watching. Lady Hawk and Scarface and all of that stuff.
Let's just say, I was expecting her to turn up earlier than she did, like, after that section. But when she does turn up, you do kind of feel it. Because, you know, A, it's Michelle Pfeiffer, and I've seen some bad Michelle Pfeiffer movies.
There are quite a few of them.
There are quite a few of those. Yeah. Oh, Dark Shadows was kind of awful. I mean, she was good in it, but it was weird.
I'm glad she came out the way she did, because had she come out any earlier, I would have expected that story to turn.
Yeah.
You know, we're all looking at each other. I think we all know what we're talking about. But when her coming out, when she did, it was very much a... It was very celebratory. I think it was.
It's the emotional climax of the film, more than the action climax.
But
as well.
Also, like the way I'm hoping that this means she'll show up for more.
Yes,
yes.
Please. But I think that was the point, right? I think that's what Peyton Reed kind of set out to do by establishing the fact that it was a search story from the very first minute. We're going to look for your mother, right? Mm. We think she's still alive. You know that from before the opening credits even roll, and from that point, I think everything else seemed to fall into place. In that process.
Yeah.
You had to get to her only at the end, because if not, it wouldn't be a payoff.
There was a slight moment where I'm like, are they retconning the previous movie? And then they explain it, and I'm like, thank you. Thank you very much. Because Scott just didn't mention this for 3 years.
Yeah. No, all of this is actually very, very tightly scripted. I think Peyton Reed seems to be the guy who can pull off a great action comedy, but at the same time fit it in to a Marvel Cinematic Universe without it feeling shoehorned. That was the problem everyone had with Ultron, right? I mean, Joss Whedon had too much to shoehorn because he had to shoehorn everything else from the past and then set up the next 5 movies. And it felt a little all over the place. This one, like you said, Ian, it was very much standalone, but it didn't feel out of place.
No.
Felt very much like a Marvel movie.
Yeah, the universe was still there. The universe is still intact. But
they even mentioned S.H.I.E.L.D.
They even mentioned S.H.I.E.L.D. a couple of times. But I think you're right. This is a little diversion, right? This is a you know, in other news kind of situation where you're not concerned about the Thanos stuff, the other sort of world ending stuff. This is just what's happening
so
in
heavy.
Middle San Francisco.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this is the fun. It's Paul Rudd. Come on, you can't. It has to be fun. We can't do it any other way. We got to have a jokey. We got to have some thieving in there. That's what he does.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's important to note that this is also very much a Wasp movie.
Mm.
I think Evangeline Lilly has a lot more screen time, or at least it feels that way, because she's doing stuff with real gravity.
And she's only saddled with that awful bob for like the opening sequence.
The opening sequence.
I completely forgot about that
when
haircut.
When she turned up later, I was like, oh God, thank God, she's
Lord,
got a hairdo.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's very much a Wasp movie. And
it makes sense that they changed the title to that. It makes 100% sense. Mm. And it grows the franchise, and it gets them closer to, like, they can now, people will, I think, happily add the Wasp to their list of the female-led Marvel movies that we all want to see.
I mean, not only that, but I think in this movie, the reason it feels like the Wasp has got a lot more screen time is because the Wasp is doing a lot more of the action bits.
Yeah.
You know, Ant-Man's sort of just like bouncing around literally at times. But
she's just better than Scott.
She's just better than Scott. Yeah. And I think that was really well addressed in this movie, because she can kick, she can punch, she can hit, whereas he's just a really good thief.
Yeah. And she trained him as much as she can, but he's still Scott.
Yeah.
And even at the end of the last film, that was very apparent. Mm. You know, I mean, there was this great little showdown between Evangeline Lilly and Michael Douglas as to why is it not me, why is it him? And he's like, you know, I can't stand to lose you, right? He's dispensable.
Yeah. Mm.
And the thing is, with this film, they didn't do a whole Gary Stu, Mary Sue thing with Paul Rudd's Ant-Man, with Scott Lang. They just they kept him the way he is. He's still incredibly inept.
Yeah.
He's still just messing about and getting everyone into trouble.
What was the Scott Lang comic? It wasn't the Incredible Ant-Man. It was like the Incredulous Ant-Man or something, or the Incorrigible Ant-Man. It was like he was he was a thief kind of guy.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, he's a thief that found this suit and has now realized he can be a better thief.
Which is a great coming out for, you know, the very first female superhero to get title billing in the MCU.
I think
it's completely earned in this script.
Yeah, you know? No, she's absolutely fantastic in it. Yeah.
And they've also grown as well. Hey, there we go. The idea of using the shrinking and growing a lot throughout this movie. Like a little bit like they were hinting at it a bit in Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom, where we started seeing dinosaurs used in other ways apart from chasing and eating.
Yep.
It's the same in this, is where there's like car chases. There's things being thrown at people. There's a great moment with a salt shaker, and you see from the guy's face hit it as he runs straight into it from the inside the salt shaker. Yeah. There's so many good shots like that that they don't look like effects, right?
No.
Like the growing and shrinking, you're just totally buying it the whole way through, which
it
is a great
real.
Idea.
Yeah.
Like
it
it's
looks
really
real.
Well done.
Yeah, it's really well done. And here's the thing. I mean, you mentioned this before, Ian. I think one of the strongest things about the MCU movies, you said you saw a YouTube video where someone talks about how their action sequences aren't just punching and kicking. They utilize the powers. They utilize each character's unique ability.
Yeah, and there was a contrast with the DCU where it's basically Superman will punch anything, no matter what the problem is.
And Batman will punch back.
Yeah. And there's no cool things. Whereas there's a scene in this where the Wasp gets to do what Deadpool did, and he spent the whole 15 minutes in his movie, and she takes the car out in less than 30 seconds.
Yes.
It's awesome. She, like, she swings out the backseat window, grabs the pillar, swings in, and then shrinks and then punches.
Yeah.
And like the car is done.
No, you need to watch this movie multiple times to just see what is happening in those sequences.
Yeah.
All of the action sequences are so rich and developed, and Ghost, now you have someone who can phase through things.
Yeah, I was going to say,
we're talking about how things are well shot. That Ghost phasing effect,
very cool.
Amazing.
And did you notice there's like emotional beats to it?
Yeah.
There's points where
it's
she's interacting
like when she's angry
with
and then,
Lawrence Fishburne, and she's kind of like seething with anger, but she's controlling it. And the phasing effect, the flickers, is like screaming.
Yes.
Yeah. And the shadow lingers for like a second longer,
good.
Right? Yeah.
It's great because Hannah John Kamen, she was in Killjoys, I think it was the show she kind of first came to prominence in, which I never really finished. And then she's turned up in Ready Player One. And I think she's got great things ahead of her. She's a really cool presence.
All of the villains in this movie are a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, she's
in
a lot of
pain
and all of that stuff, but she's a fun villain because of the way she provides a counter to our heroes.
Yeah.
Because our heroes can shrink and fly and do all of that stuff.
But they can't punch her if she's phasing through
them. Exactly, right? They can't do anything to her. And then there's Walton Goggins,
who's
just like always there doing
just
crazy stuff.
He has more hair in this movie than I've seen him in any movie ever, I think. I don't know how that works. I thought he had an actual receding hairline. It turns out he actually has a fine mane of hair. Did someone call him a Southern gentleman at one point?
Yes,
there was a gag about like
we're
looking for these Southern gentlemen, and it's like he's just slowly going to be in every movie ever. I think it's in his contract at this point.
But that's what makes these movies so much fun, right? I think that's why we enjoy them so much, because they're full of comedians, character actors, legends like Lawrence Fishburne and Michael Douglas. But you wouldn't put Walton Goggins in a movie like this.
And also, you think, we don't need Walton Goggins in this movie when everything else is going on.
Anybody else.
There
is
an incredible amount of skill in juggling all these balls and keeping together and making it look effortless. Because it does feel like it feels light and frivolous, but oh my God, they must have like some kind of, you know, psycho killer red
string board. There's a master plan
somewhere,
Because
how you switch from one thing to the next thing to the next thing, how you switch between all these storylines, how you keep them all in your head. Like, you never have any problem following what's going on. You get a nice tour of San Francisco.
Yeah.
You even get to see that curly street. And like, you never feel lost.
You get the curly street, you get down to Fisherman's Wharf. Yeah. It's everything. It's great.
Yeah. Watch out for the seagulls.
I think at the end of every production meeting, Kevin Feige goes home and just sort of exports his brain out, because there's no way he can keep all this information from 20 films in his head. This isn't going to move along the main MCU storyline.
Yeah.
You know, it's a slight diversion. So if you're going to go in, hoping to find out what happens at the end of, or following up of the end of the Avengers, you're gonna be disappointed, because it's not going to be that.
No.
This is going to be a story about Scott Lang and Hank Pym and, you know, and hope. And
it's about hope.
It's about hope.
I walked into that one.
It's a small family dramedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is what it is.
Yeah. They're putting the band back together.
happens to have some superheroes.
Also important to note, there are two post-credit sequences, so watch out for those. And the last one is kind of fun setup for the next movies. Mm.
Yes, yes, that is true.
It's a little silly.
That is true.
So don't forget about that. You know, don't leave just because the first set of credits are over.
And also, don't forget, a lot of people are asking this question. It is set during the events of Infinity War.
Yeah, around the same time.
Simultaneously, right? Mm. If you're wondering where this fits in the timeline, it's not really a prequel. It
if you're wondering why Scott Lang's not freaking out about all his friends turning to dust, it's...
because it hasn't happened yet.
Exactly.
Exactly. This explains it. Ant-Man and the Wasp will be in cinemas tomorrow. Go check it out. Let us know what you think. I'm on @UmaPagan.
I'm on @McNastyPrime.
I'm @BayeWai.
You're listening to At The Movies. This is BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.